time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 677 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week features the return of two great comics creators, PJ Holden and Paul Tobin, who are bringing us Dark Pyramid from Mad Cave Studios. Both creators are returning to the podcast, and they are working together to bring a gripping new series of ancient conspiracies, monstrous horrors, and the ultimate fight for truth. Their electrifying five-issue miniseries will begin in February and is described this way. Huki Hidalgo, adventurous and popular live streamer, has gone missing while climbing Mount Denali in Alaska. When his girlfriend Becca arrives at the base of the mountain to retrace his steps, she soon discovers something beyond the dreamy and impressive landscape. There's a conspiracy deep within the heart of Denali itself, a dark pyramid, silent and waiting. Becca and the scores of Huki fans determined to either find him or find some fun will face death, avalanches, and monsters to find the truth. We talk about how this book came to be, who the characters are, and what we can expect from both Paul and PJ in the coming months. Be sure to let your local comic shop know you want to order this book as soon as you finish listening to our fun conversation. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get on with the show. Described as a combination of pulse-pounding adventure, chilling horror, and high-stakes mystery, Dark Pyramid will take place in Alaska, specifically on and underneath, and I'm probably going to fracture this, Mount Denali. As the girlfriend of a live streaming adventurer searches for her missing boyfriend. And let's go in the opposite of these days. People seem to do this. The artist is first. PJ Holden is known for The Lion and the Eagle. How you doing, PJ?
I'm doing very well, thanks. I don't know if you've murdered the name of that place because I've only ever seen it written down. So yeah. I'll take it as read. You're right.
I tend to destroy names and stuff like that.
I'm from Northern Ireland, where we have a particular way with our accents, so it wouldn't. Yeah, I might be thinking I'm saying it right, but of course I'm probably not.
All right, now let's do the writers. Paul Tobin, known for recently from The String, The Mammoth, and Heart Acres. So, how you doing, Paul?
Very good. And it's Denali, Mount Denali. So,
Denali. Okay, so we're kind of right. So that'll be good.
Close enough.
I was telling before we started to record that you guys are coming back after an absence on this podcast. Paul, I talked with back in 2014 when you were doing I Was the Cat way back then. And then PJ, about a year later in 2015, I talked with you about Department of Monsterology.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Weren't we in our teens then, PJ?
Paul, I don't know about you, but I'm only in my teens now, so I might have been. I think I had to do that interview between nappy changes of my own nappy because I was so youthful and young.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
All right. Well, let's say that the Dark Pyramid is a 5-issue miniseries, and it's published by Mad Cave Studios, and it starts on March the 12th. So I think if you let your store know right away that you want to get it, they can still get the information in.
Order cutoff isn't due yet, is it? I don't think so. I think you have a bit of time yet, but order it early and order it often.
Yeah,
well, get into the state of publishers and places like Diamond and stuff these days. I guess let the store know and they'll take care.
Order it before the entire comic industry collapses. Do that.
Make sure to get it in there and stuff. And I have read the first one, which I really did enjoy. I thought that was a great thing. Now, I got to ask about this, about the streaming business, because that's a kind of a recent development that people are endlessly going places and streaming their adventures live and stuff. But Paul, was that your idea?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A little me and Mike Martz. Mike and I talked, editor Mike Martz, talked a little bit about the story, what he wanted to see and the streaming aspect. And I really like that because as a writing tool, you have your captions right there in a way. He's explaining things and you can, it actually works.
It's a great way for exposition to be dumped without having to kind of forcibly force it in there because
exactly.
Most streaming is exposition.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thanks for using the word dumped, PJ, for my writing that. I appreciate that.
No, I'm saying you didn't do that. You skillfully avoided that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Where another writer would dump it, you skillfully doled it out in an appropriate amount over the course of the comic. That's what I'm saying, Paul.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, let me read. There's a paragraph description of the story, and let me read that. Hooky Hidalgo, adventurist and popular live streamer, has gone missing while climbing Mount Denali in Alaska. When his girlfriend Becca arrives at the base of the mountain to retrace his steps, she soon discovers something beyond the dreamy and impressive landscape. There's a conspiracy deep within the heart of Denali itself, a dark pyramid, silent and waiting. Becca and the scores of Hooky fans determined to either find him or find some fun will face death, avalanches, and monsters to find the truth. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of a nice way to kind of particularly get the first issue under our belts with that. And I've seen some pages coming along, some interesting covers. I think, PJ, you did one of the covers, right?
Yeah. I've done covers for all five issues. And the very first issue, we wanted some alternative covers. So we suggested a couple of names. John McRae is a really good friend of mine. And I've known him for decades and I've worked with him a lot. And so he was an obvious choice. And I kind of, I felt anyway that John and I are quite simpatico. And I felt it would be good fun to get someone in there whose artwork is so kind of on the other side of where John and I do our work, that it gives a good sort of because the I think people will have predisposed ideas of the story based on the artwork, but it's, you know, it's a bigger picture than that. So so it was fun to get Allison in to do a cover as well.
Okay, now I'll ask both of you. I'll start with Paul. As far as like doing research, knowing, let's say, what Mount Denali looks like and what streaming and all this kind of stuff, did you have to do much research in order to be able to get this stuff going?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of like landscape research, especially like distances, what the type of things around were. Like, I didn't want to, you know, give PJ bad reference. PJ will attest that I threw plenty of reference and things
lots
like that.
Lots of reference photos in there, yeah.
They were helpful.
They were helpful to give me some sense. I mean, without the context, it's sort of hard to know. Again, like you're trying to kind of build a picture in your head of where this place is and what it's like and stuff. And without going there, it's hard to see it. So you get pictures of giant mountains and then there's so much to Denali. It's so big, that area, that you'll get other photos that are like almost completely different ecosystem. You're going, is this the same place? But it is. It's all in there. It's a vast. I mean, I live here and I'm in Belfast and we have a very small mountain called Cave Hill and a thing called the Black Mountain. And they are tiny. Denali is massive, massive in a way I can't even wrap my head around.
Wow. Okay. What about streaming? Did you like, Paul, did you see some streaming podcasts or what did you do to get that under your belt?
Not so much. I mean, that's pretty much part of the modern world. So I kind of know what's going on there. I did some research on like what types of equipment that Hooky would be using. So that we could break it all in like the first three or four pages. But just cameras basically.
Streaming is interesting because it's one of those things that the form of it moves so quickly, but the basic principle of it has been consistent for decades. So I started streaming artwork in 2001. 1999 was the first thing that was streamed online. Yeah, it was from a web camera that took one photo every 30 seconds or so, and I had to install my own server on my own computer. And if somebody wanted to watch me stream, and they had to go to my IP address specifically so they could see this photo update every 30 minutes. So, I mean, like the very first streaming thing, I think, was a university campus with a camera pointed at a coffee machine. So the basic and modern streaming basically now involves a lot of TikTok dances and a lot of other things going on. So the form is different, but it's stayed remarkably consistent in that it's a camera showing something happening live. And that's the kind of that's the thing you latch onto and go, that's what streaming really is. Because I mean, if Hugo Hidalgo were a popular TikToker, for example, he'd be up that mountain doing dances and not trying to discover things so much. So yeah, I mean, you kind of hold on to what that is and try not to make it too specific, I think, because if you get super specific, like, I mean, even using the equipment, if you put a specific model of a camera in there, then suddenly, you know, 6 months or a year later, nobody's using that. Nobody knows what that thing is anymore. So it's
exactly,
you've got to sort of be vague enough that people pick up on what it is, but not so specific that it instantly ages, you know. Luckily, people have been streaming long enough now. I don't think the idea of streaming is going to age, but you know, it is kind of remarkable how fast things can age out of storytelling.
Yeah, it won't be long till little drone cameras are flying through the air following us. And
yeah, I won't be surprised. Now, I've got to ask, the main character, the one that starts everything, his name is Hooky. How did he get named Hooky?
That was actually Mike Martz. He wanted that name, and I like it so much that it was like one of those, oh, how about we name him Hooky Hidalgo? And I'm like, yeah, we're done.
Is he based on anybody that you know? Is he a creation of your imagination? Where did he come from?
He's basically a adventure type. I mean, I used to do a lot of rock climbing before I had a couple of injuries. So, I mean, I kind of gave him the personality of some of those people that I've met. I gave PJ a visual of one of my studio mates that I like, and he kind of worked from there, you know, and he did exactly what I like people that I work with to do, is like, take it as a base, not as a work from this at all times. You know, it's like this type, not this guy, but this type.
Of course, that leads me to the question for PJ is, does he look like? Is he, again, the same thing? Is he a creation of your imagination? Is he based on somebody? Where did he come from?
Well, Paul told me who it was. I don't know if you want to reveal who it was, Paul, or whether you want to keep that to
sure, yourself. Why not? Dan Scotty, he writes Flash Gordon. He took a really good photo of himself, and I'm like, oh man, this type of guy, he looked like a adventurer type.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got a reference photo of Dan, but you know, as Paul said, I use that as a base and go from there. There's no point being too beholden to kind of a reference image of a person, because I'm not a photographic artist. I'm not the kind of artist that draws photo reel. I think there are massive advantages to being that kind of artist, but also massive disadvantages. I think with how I draw characters, especially, they're very easy to like straight off the bat, I think. Whereas if you are a very realistic artist, then you're kind of relying more on the script and what they're saying to each other for you to kind of instantly like them. You know, there's a different sort of chemistry to it nearly. I'll take his hair and I'll take his body type and I'll take a sort of some facial features and, but I won't sort of stick to it. That will, as the character kind of gets drawn over multiple pages, the facial features shift a little bit and become almost like your handwriting rather than you know, it's like the difference between copying somebody else's handwriting and doing your own handwriting. It suddenly becomes part of who you are and what you're drawing. So I mean, it's good to have a base, though. It's good to have a little start point to go, okay, that's who you're after, or someone like that. And because then you're sort of not drawn everything just entirely out of your own head, which is, you know, a surprisingly limited amount of space in my head with a surprisingly limited amount of data. So as much stuff as I can get from outside, the better.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the basic that we just wanted to get is like the adventurer types that I know, and the, especially the climbers and things like that, are skinny guys. I didn't want like some huge bulk of a man. So, you know, that's kind of what I wanted.
So Becca is the same, or is she more a creation of your imaginations?
I don't remember if I gave you any reference.
I don't think you did. I think there was just a type rather than a reference, and it needed to be someone that could stand beside Hookie and not look weird. Mm-hmm. That makes any sense. Needed to be a character. I mean, we spend far more time with Becca than we do with Hookie, and so it was a character that I had to kind of be much more comfortable with drawing. I mean, to be honest, most of the reference material I was digging up was kinds of coats and buckle fasteners and that sort of thing, rather than facial features, which was always going to be something that I was going to draw mostly from my imagination, because I wanted to be a character that...
Some coats and things like that.
Yeah.
Uniforms.
They're always handy.
Yeah,
they're always handy because, again, your imagination, you can kind of end up drawing yourself into circles and drawing the same stuff over and over again, thinking you're, oh, I've never drawn this before. I wonder why it comes out so easily. And, oh, no, I've drawn that a million times. That's why.
Well, I got to ask, there's a funny part of this whole story that made me laugh out loud. It's all these people who go there to support Becca and Hookie who are – there's how many people are there that are there – trying to either find Hookie or to support Becca? There's a whole bunch of people on this huge mountain, and there's this collection of people who are other adventurer types. And, you know, they can't come to a good end as far as
Let me tell you, too many for one page. That's so many
that were. I really worked you in that whole sequence. I forget what issue that is. It turned out so beautiful, though.
I think if you're going to say you're a streamer and you're a popular streamer and you've gone missing, people will turn up. I mean, my kids will tell me that there's a TikToker in Belfast at the moment, and there are crowds of people following them around, and that's the nature of the modern world. I don't know who these people are. My kids are kind of super excited about it, and then you go, "Who is that?" And they go, "You wouldn't know." I go, "All right then, okay, right, fair enough.
Move on."
but there are, I mean, people turn up and follow them around religiously. That's the thing. That's the thing that seems extraordinary, but is really true to life.
Now, see, there's some people who actually stream following streamers.
Oh yeah.
That just makes me laugh. I said, "Well, you know, how many? You know, none of us are living the real life anymore. We're watching other people do stuff, and then we watch other people do stuff."
Yeah, and people commenting on, you know, the people will sit and play. You know, it's the same as people watching somebody play a video game. You know, they'll not play the video game; they'll watch the person play the video game. So, that all stuff is sort of true to life. Although, you know, for the purposes of ours, the more people, I don't know, can I say that the more people there are to be killed, the better? I don't know if it is terrible to say it. Well, no, there's an awful lot of death in that.
Well, I got a sense that was going to happen, because you can't have all these many people on the side of a huge mountain and them all walk away without something happening.
There's some consequence.
I do want to make one comment, because I have fallen in love with a Christmas movie by the name of Klaus. It's an animated film.
Oh, I'm more familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, and what happened was, I've seen the movie, and now there's this whole genre. I mean, there's hundreds of people watching the movie, recording their reactions to the film. And I'm watching these people watch the movie instead of watching the movie myself. And I'm just kind of like, this is a strange setup. I just can't imagine everybody wanting to watch people watch things. That just
it's weird.
Anyway, it's called Dark Pyramid, and if you the one cover has the pyramid pointing down at Becca, which I find really kind of interesting, and then there's other ones
that's Hookie on the cover. That's oh, it is. Cover, yeah, it's rather than Becca. Okay. You can tell because the hair is different and he's a bloke. but cool. I mean, I wouldn't mind talking about that cover because it was a fun cover to do. And it comes from, they asked for a cover for issue one and we were kind of trying to figure out how to point out the scale, but also how scary and, you know, you want it to feel ominous and odd and strange. I mean, it's a lot of boxes have to be ticked for that kind of cover. And you were always on to, I mean, the biggest difficulty I always had with it is that the mountain is so vast that if you try and show someone in the scale of that mountain, you're all they are is a little ant in the picture. And then if you go in close to them, you get no sense of the scale of the actual thing. And then the Black Pyramid is this kind of, I imagine it as a sort of hulking black vibrational space deep within the Denali, rather than a literal black pyramid, although that's sort of, you know, it might also be that as well. And when we were doing, I did a bunch of covers and trying to get the Black Pyramid in to show that's what we were talking about, and trying to get Hooky in as a main character and trying to show he's on a mountain. It was all very difficult. And I think I did that inverted pyramid. It sort of occurred to me that would be an interesting. It's like it's got this oppressive nature, and it's hovering. It's very forefront and weird, and you don't know quite what's happening on it. And I thought, well, maybe they'll go for this because I can't tick the boxes with the other the ways I'm trying this, but with this kind of inverted pyramid, it's doing it in a sort of non. It's a non-literal kind of cover, but. But it sort of, I mean, if I it felt right, I think is what I'm trying to say. So I don't know how you felt about it, Paul, when you got that cover idea or not, if it was,
I liked it a lot for you. Cause everything you were saying is true. It's hard to get that sense of scale, but this kind of brings that sense of ominous weight. So I like it a lot, but yeah, the cover process can be hard because it's like, you know, you turned for that first cover, you did a lot of versions. And then there'll be like 10 versions and we're all looking at it and somebody's saying, well, I like 3 and 4. And I'm like going, geez, 3 and 4, my least favorites, you know? And so it was like,
I think I normally do about 6 covers, but I think I probably did about 9 or 10 cover ideas for that. And usually it's like, here's a bunch of covers. Tell me if there's anything you like. And if you don't, I can do more or we can move these around to change these things. So, but the first cover, you want it to do something. And I mean, you really want to tell it. It's a story about people because I think it'd be easy to do a picture of a mountain with a pyramid in it and not know there are people involved in this story. Right. So you sort of wanted to show that it was a story about people you know, just it's doing a lot. It's trying to do a lot and trying to get you. And also you wanted to sort of go, what the hell is this about? To make someone pick the thing up, you know, so you're sort of, and I think that sort of inverted pyramid kind of does that. But I mean, the idea in my head was that the inverted pyramid is just the idea of the Black Pyramid within Denali. And that idea is a kind of this weird oppressive, you know, it's one of those things like you can draw the physical stuff of what is happening to someone when they get closer to this thing, but it's very hard to show the kind of, that whole thing about, what do you call them? H.P. Lovecraft stories where characters start going mad when they get closer to something they can't quite fathom, and there's an element of that. You know, I'd imagine there's an element of that to this big black weirdness. So that's, you know, saying trying to do a lot on the cover. I don't know if I've convinced myself or what, but
I think you nailed the expression. That was the main thing for me. That expression of what the heck and fear. So that worked really well for me.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask, of course, it's called Dark Pyramid, and based on what PJ's saying, there actually is a Dark Pyramid we come across, or is that spoiling things?
I think we can say that there actually is something within Denali. It's based on real life truth. Like the Chinese set off a major bomb at one point. I forget what type, atomic of some sort. And whenever we do that, it sends vibrations through the land, and you can you can sort of do readings. And when they did it, there's something, there's a black shape within Denali. And like PJ was saying, in real life, it's probably, you know, just a different style of rock, you know, within it. But yeah, there's something in there. So like conspiracy theorists love to go, you know, go, oh, there's an ancient alien pyramid within there. And that's kind of, you know, strange in real life, but you know, mm-hmm. we're in fiction, so we can play with whatever we want. And it was fun to make decisions on what it.
Hang on, I just want to back up. You're saying none of this is true.
The scripts I wrote you.
I thought they were a documentary thing.
I changed the names. Really, is it
Duck the Innocent?
Yeah.
Now, there's one cover, though, that I had to say, I kind of, you've got the upside down pyramid, mm-hmm. and there's this, I don't want to say this that makes it sound racial or something, but there's this dark character hanging on or hanging from the dark pyramid, yeah. and all this long hair hanging down, and there's all these cameras taking pictures of it, okay. which made me laugh out loud when I said, you know, what's the, instead of running in terror, they're taking pictures of this thing.
So I will say that they're not cameras. They are warning beacons.
Oh.
They are, that is a character that, Eve turns up at the end of the first issue, doesn't she? I can't remember. Yeah, she just turns up at the end of the first issue, but we spend a lot of time with Eve. She's a unique, weird kind of character that whose body is sort of like her body language is kind of strange and not quite human, and you know, kind of moves in an odd little peculiar way.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, she was one of like two main things that were going to be like smaller parts mm-hmm. of the story, but once me and PJ and Christina Harrington, the editor, had Eve around a little bit, we're like, oh, let's embrace this. And then there's one other type of monster that was kind of a throwaway type of monster. And once PJ drew the monster type, oh my God, we just needed to have it around more. So, so they became characters as well.
Cool. So is most of the miniseries going to take place inside the mountain?
No,
on outside. And around, I think. Yeah, on and around it.
Yeah, okay. On and around.
Okay. So something to look forward to. We get to see that.
We will get to see inside the mountain as well.
Oh, good. That'll be good. That'll be fun. Because now, of course, that lets your imagination run wild, PJ, as far as like drawing what the inside of a mountain looks like.
Yeah, I mean, that and more. I mean, I think what people are assuming is there's a sort of cryptid element to this, but it's more mythological nature of God kind of thing to it in some respects, or nature of creation to it. So it's a bigger kind of doorway to something. So trying to keep it as vague as possible, make it really exciting. But,
makes me think of Star Trek in some ways. And there was Star Trek V where the God comes around, apparently God, and says he wants a starship. And I remember Captain Kirk going, what does God want to do with a starship? And it makes me think, what does God want to do with a dark pyramid?
Well, that's the thing.
We got to buy the book to find out.
You will find out why and what this thing is and what it contains and, you know, why it's there. That's the thing.
So as far as I imagine, Paul, you've got the scripts all done for all five issues.
Oh yeah, we're all done with all five.
Oh, it's all finished.
Oh, you've done the art too, PJ.
Everything's finished. Yeah.
Wow.
It's penciled and colored and everything. Yeah, it's that thing's coming out.
So many times I talk to miniseries people and say we're on issue 3, and we hope to have issue 4 done by the next month, and then 5 before the issue has to come out.
Yeah, no, so this is all finished. I mean, that's my biggest problem is trying to remember what happens in issue 1, and so I don't accidentally spoil stuff that's happening in issue 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So, because I've done it all, it's all finished.
See, that's one thing I like about Mad Cave is they gave us an opportunity to do that, which does allow us to work on the story as a whole, where sometimes like you were talking, Wayne, it's like you can end up with a company that wants to release right away, and then you're like, you've got number one on the stands and you're working on number five, and you're like, oh man, I have a really good story idea, but it needs to be, you know, set up in issue one, and people have that in their hands already. So with Dark Pyramid, we were able to build the story as a whole and complete it as a whole. And I think it made it a tighter, better story.
Is that why you guys went with Mad Cave? Because, I've been a fan of Mad Cave ever since they first started. Somebody asked me, I did an interview with a creator a couple episodes ago, and they asked me, what was the first Mad Cave book I ever read? And I couldn't remember the name, so I had to do some research. It's called Midnight Task Force. And this tells you how long ago this was. Most people have never heard of this book. But it was kind of about a guy who had mental problems, but he was a detective, and he had this group that came in along, and they were trying to solve a mystery that nobody else could solve. But this guy could normally solve things like, all he'd have to do is hear several of the clues, and he knew right away who did it. And I really enjoyed that book, but that was like 10 years ago, I'd say, that came out. So I really liked that book, and that got me into them.
Was it recently Mad Cave or 10 years old?
They were kind of lurking as a company for a while, but lately they've been explosive.
Well, Mike Martz will do that to you. He's quite good.
He's great.
Because I've interviewed him too back in his previous employment, which we won't go into that. That's past. But the thing that always amazes me about him is that he's also, I always appreciate people who can look at things from both sides of the table. You know, they understand what the fans think like, but they also understand what the creators are trying to do. And Mike is that way. He really understands all aspects of this. When he went to Mad Cave, I thought, boy, that was a big, big deal for Mad Cave, because he's going to, and he has, he's made this, the Mad Cave has exploded as far as things like that. So it's just, so you guys have picked the right place at the right time as far as that. So that was great.
Yeah, all the editors that I've worked with at Mad Cave, and I've worked with several, have been just fantastic. Christina Harrington, James Emmett, they're almost unfortunately quick in some ways, because as a creator, sometimes it's nice to finish something and go, oh, dang, I'm totally done. I can sit and play video games for a bit, and then it's like, you know, it's like, here's your notes on that. And I was like, I only sent that an hour ago. let me take a nap or something. But it's great because they're pretty incisive too. All of the Mad Cave editors. Mike was, I've worked with Mike at Mad Cave and then the previous employment. And he's really good at like finding that one, you know, it's like, now this seems kind of weak, and it's like, oh man, I was hoping nobody noticed that, but you know, but yeah, that's a plot problem. I'll fix it.
That's great, because I always appreciate Mike and his ability to tell good stories and stuff. So it's a perfect marriage as far as like what you guys are doing, and with Mike, they're kind of shepherding things in the right directions. I mean, they've got Dick Tracy, they've got Flash Gordon, they've got all these, you know, as well as your things, which your guys are building a franchise. They've got well-known franchises there too, which I always think is, the old thing about rising tides raises all boats. Having them and having people be aware of Mad Cave is going to help you guys as far as the sales on Dark Pyramid. I think that's going to be great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They have a lot of fun stuff. There's like some fun public stuff coming up, like Flash Gordon and Dick Tracy are the start of that wave. And they have some cool stuff coming up.
Wow. Pretty great. So as this is obviously in the can, and it's going to come out probably around the same week each month, I bet you. So about the second week of each month until it's all done. Yeah. But be sure to get in there. Again, I say get to your local shop and let them know you want Dark Pyramid from Mad Cave Comics. Because you got to know both. You know, the little store I go to, I have to tell them. They have to know all the details or they can't find it. So yeah. I have to make
small shops. I mean, unless you're asking specifically for a book, they're not going to take a wee punt on it, because they, you know, it's a tough market out there. So you've got to support a book. If you like the look of it, you've got to go out and support it and ask for it early and often. again.
Because I was at a big store at one time, and there was a book, and it was called Venture. It was like Adventure, but they took the ad off, and the name of the hero was Venture, and he was kind of a Superman-ish thing. And they had a mini series for 5 issues, and I got 4 issues. I go back for the 5th. It's not there. And I said, wait a second, I got the first 4 issues. Where's the 5th? Well, too many people wanted Marvel books, so we couldn't order that book.
Mm.
I said, I got my 4 books, and now you're leaving me hanging with the conclusion? So I had to run around to – I had to go and order it online in order to get – so I could actually read that book. That drives me insane. Luckily, if you work with the people at the stores, they'll be sure to get what you ask for.
Mm. Right, definitely.
But keep track, too. I always like to say, because sometimes they forget a couple months down the road, did you ask for that? Oh, I forgot. I go, ah. So I always try to get that. So as far as, let's just say Dark Pyramid, let's say it comes to a satisfying conclusion one way or another. Is there more in the Dark Pyramid universe that you guys might have in store for us?
I hope so. Well, I mean, it's hard to tell because of market. But, yeah, I know where I would like to go later if the opportunity arises.
I mean, it's definitely ended on a, there's more of this world to do. There's more things in this world to do. But it's a limited miniseries. So, if it doesn't, it doesn't, but the hope would be that people will read it and enjoy it and go, yeah, let's go. I mean, the nice thing is because it exists, and is definitely coming out, you will be able to order 5 issues and read 5 issues. It's not going to die at 4. But the hope is that if, enough people, I don't know if people email or write anymore to comic publishers, but, write into your local comic publisher and tell them we want more of this. That's the way to get more of it.
Wow. Well, it definitely looks great. And I think that Supernatural stuff, let's see, 5 issues, that'll be ending March, April, May, June. Well, so all 5 issues will be out in time for Halloween. So that's a good time to be able to catch up, because it has a look of a supernatural kind of a story. And that's
it is.
It's creepy at times, yeah. I like a good creepy story. So
that'll be perfect for Halloween to get all this. If you have any friends who haven't read Dark Pyramid and you want to give it for a holiday gift, shall we say, or for Halloween, be sure to pick up the issue so they can give them the whole set in time for Halloween or for the holidays, as they like to say these days. Stuff, because it really looks like it's a lot of fun. Is there anything else that we should know about this book before we move on to other subjects? Paul, anything else that you'd like us to know?
No, I think you covered it really well. I mean, I can say
it's hard because there's things I'd love to be able to talk about, but they're not going to show up until 2 or 3, and they're little spoilers. Like, I really want to talk about, Paul was talking about the one particular thing that I drew, and we ended up having a lot of them, and I would like to talk about those guys. but it'll spoil it for people, and they're fun whenever they turn up, and you kind of go, oh no, let's let them be a feature that you find as you read it cool. And enjoy it, I hope.
Sounds like fun. So, it's going to be a great book, I think. People are going to really enjoy it, and I hope this is only the beginning of a Dark Pyramid franchise that will get lots of good things going on, stuff like that. So it really looks terrific. Now, which leads me to is this the most recent thing you're doing for Mad Cave, the two of you, or are there other projects that let's start with Paul. Are you working on other projects that we should be aware of?
Well, String is coming out from Mad Cave, a book I really enjoy. And then the same artist that's on that, Carlos Javier Olivares, he and I are working on another unannounced Mad Cave book that I'm really excited by. It was one of those. What Mad Cave to me is fantastic because they don't really have a type. They're not like, oh, we want this style of book. They just want something interesting. So yeah, when they greenlit this other book that I can't talk about too much, it was like me going, Really? You guys will publish it? I thought this was too crazy, but okay, let's do it. So,
well, good stories are worth the searching out, let me tell you. I really like it. And Dark Pyramid really gets me. I'm dying to see what happens now. That's the thing. The bad news about reading the first issue. Now I want to read the second issue. I've got to wait for the second issue.
You're going to wait longer than most then?
Yeah, that's
terrible. That is deeply unfair.
It'll be worth the wait, though. I think it'll be definitely worth it. But so, okay, so that's what you're working on, Paul. How about you, PJ? Are there other projects that you're working on that
we should be aware of? Yeah, with Mad Cave, yes. I can't talk about it because it's very early. And I mean, generally, I don't really like talking about stuff that is in the mix that hasn't been completed yet, because you don't know between now and then. But what do you call it? I've got first issue, I think it's a 4, might be a 5 issue mini series in the can, so this might be a while yet before you even see it. And it's nothing like, as Paul was saying, the nice thing is they don't seem to have a set, we only do this kind of book or we only do that kind of book. They do good books, and that, you know, whatever the topic or whatever the genre. So this thing is, I don't want to spoil it, I can't talk about it, but it is not something they've published before in terms of genre, from a fantastic writer who you haven't seen do this genre before. There you go.
This is okay, good, wow. Big, isn't it?
That's all very intriguing. I want to know.
I like teases. I don't want to be spoiled. I want teases, even though the website I work for has major spoilers. I like major teases. I don't like major spoilers.
So That's all I'm giving you. Although I will say it's a genre I've worked in quite comprehensively, but that doesn't help because I've done everything.
Well, while I'm talking to you, PJ, is there places on social media that we can follow you so we can keep up with things as they're announced?
Blue Sky is the main place you'll find me. I'm pauljholden.com on Blue Sky. So at pauljholden.com on Blue Sky, which is also my website, which is, you will always find me on there, which is at www.pauljholden.com. But Blue Sky is where I'm mostly at.
It's so weird it's so weird that websites seem to have faded away, and now it's all social media platforms where.
Yeah. I mean, we've lost a lot in doing that, I think, and which is a pity, because I grew up reading. You know, you'd stumble across a great artist talking about their artwork, and there'd be a blog, and it would be filled with stuff. And now everyone, and me included, everyone's just putting out little brain farts that are not, you know, sometimes barely worth reading. but the constant flow of them, the constant sort of feeding of the of little bits of snippets of things in the world, makes you feel like you're connected to a lot of stuff. So it always feels like you're more connected to the comics industry, which is useful when you're stuck in Northern Ireland and there's not much happening around you. Although I'm going for dinner with John McRae tomorrow, but that's the height of my comic book industry explorations in the next couple of days.
Okay. How about you, Paul? Are there social media platforms we can find your information on?
I'm at Blue Sky as well. You can find me there. I post way too much there because it's really easy to do. But I also have a website, paultobin.net, that I spend a lot of time working on.
Yeah, Paul is one of the few people still doing old-fashioned blogs that are worth looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend
it. I try to have my website is not just me. It's like everything I like. So I have galleries of, you know, Kirby art, Italian fumetti, and anything that kind of really gets my head. I want my site to be a go-to site for entertainment, not just me. It's not just about me. I love comics and so many things that I like to have a comprehensive site. So, yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
Well, I got to ask you guys, were you part of the recent, and I use the word exodus, to Blue Sky, or have you been on Blue Sky for a while? Because I was on Blue Sky when you had to get an invitation. I begged somebody for an invitation. They gave me when I got over there, and I've been on there for several years, and there was this mad influx. All of a sudden, about thousands of people flooded Blue Sky, and I'm getting all these requests to like them and stuff, and I'm going like, where'd these people come from? Apparently, there was this move.
I think there's been about three or four little exoduses over the years. I said earlier, but coming from IT, I've always been interested in IT-related things. So I'm always, every time there's a new social media platform, I'll kind of lob my username into it and just make sure I've got that. But the past year or so has been me really weaning myself entirely off Twitter and moving over to Blue Sky. In some respects, I came off Facebook quite a few years ago, because there reaches a point very often in these things where you're going, hey, I feel like I'm an employee of Facebook at this point. I don't feel like I'm doing this for me now. I feel like what I'm doing is curating Facebook's data to make sure Facebook knows enough about everyone around them. And it's, and you kind of go, what am I doing? What am I doing with my life? So, so Blue Sky is, I kind of had come off Blue Sky because it's sort of an open platform, although even that isn't quite as open as you'd want it to be. Felt like a better place to put my time and effort into, because I think, you know, everyone that's doing stuff is producing value for whatever social media platform they're on. And you have to kind of decide, do you want to produce value for that particular platform or for some other one? So.
See, I'm on about 10 different platforms because I'm constantly trying to promote the podcast, and I don't get into discussions so much because I don't have time for that.
No, that's the thing.
I live in the future. I'm always thinking, who am I interviewing this week?
I find as well. I mean, I've been off Twitter for a while, part of me coming off it, quite apart from any of the other reasons that you would come off Twitter, was that it just wasn't working as a platform to talk to people and as a platform to raise your own profile and to let people know what's happening and stuff. I think at my height, not a huge amount of followers, but 15,000 followers, which is a big number, but in any given moment, maybe you'll get 100 people might see something that you've done or said. So at that point, it's like, well, the ratio of people seeing stuff versus the people following me to find out stuff is, it just wasn't. And even then, I mean, after Elon Musk took over, that number dipped quite precipitously down to a couple of people seeing stuff. And it was like, well, at this point, there's no point even being on it, because I could go out and shout out loud in my front garden and more people would know what's going on than if I posted on Twitter. So
you could stream that, just you walking
I
out.
I could stream it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, also, I don't know how you're feeling, Paul, but you reach a point where your age is such that, as I've already said, I'm only just a teenager, but you reach a point where your age, where you're thinking, I can't do another social media platform. I just can't do it. Don't make me do it.
Yeah. I like Blue Sky quite a lot, and I hope I don't ever have to move because it's exhausting. And
this will certainly be it.
I've logged since left Twitter entirely because of the reasons you were talking about, PJ, and just because ethically I can't be there.
Well, let me ask you guys one more question. Are you guys going to be doing conventions this year now that we're in 2025?
Well, if people invite me, then yes. But apart from that, no, I mean, I'm in Northern Ireland, so American conventions are quite difficult to get to, quite expensive to get to. Some European conventions, occasionally I might be invited over, but the UK convention circuit is there. I think there's a little convention in Northern Ireland, in Enniskillen, which is in Northern Ireland, which is happening in July, I think, and I'll be at that one. But I'm so available on Blue Sky, it feels silly to go to a convention sometimes, but I'm too, Northern Ireland is quite far away from most places, so it's always a pain to get anywhere.
Okay. Paul, how about you?
I don't have any scheduled right now. I really got out of, like, when COVID hit, I got out of the habit of doing conventions. I used to do a lot of conventions, but I really don't so much anymore. Even I live in Portland, Oregon, and we have conventions right here, and I tend not to even go to them, which is unfortunate because I have a mountain of comp copies and things that I need to sell.
Okay, well, I guess we can always follow you on social media if we want to keep
following up with me on social media. Every so often, because I'm sort of conscious, people people like going to conventions to talk to you, and people like going to conventions to buy things from you directly, and people like going to conventions because they can get a sketch and so on. So every so often I'll say, if you want a sketch, hit me. I'm doing some sketches for people and do them that way rather than doing the conventions. But it is kind of, I mean, some of the conventions are so big that I'm better known in the UK than I would be in the US. So the UK conventions are usually kind of busier for me, and I find myself drowning a little bit if I go to New York Comic Con, which I've been to quite a few times. But if I go to that Comic Con itself and I kind of put a little flag up and say, hello, I'm here, I feel like I'm just drowning in a sea of people. But I mean, I do love conventions, and if someone invites me to one, I will leap on a plane in a heartbeat.
All right. So people, there's your open invitation. Good. If you want PJ to go at your con, invite him.
Yeah.
And he'll come into it. So good. Well, it's great talking with you both. Again, it's Dark Pyramid. It's going to be March 12th is the first issue will be out via 5-issue miniseries. Be sure as soon as you get done listening to this interview to go and let your local comic shop know that you want this book so they can order it. And be sure that they get it for you. And it's great fun to talk with you guys again, Paul and PJ. So much success. I hope this is a big thing and we get Dark Pyramid 2 or whatever that comes after it and all kinds of good things. So keep up the wonderful stuff.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thanks much.
Yeah. If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.